Good morning. Welcome into a Tuesday. This is the first day of the week for us here at Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. This is Tony Beam. I'm the Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
So you had a good weekend, huh?
I did have a good weekend.
Yeah, we did too. We went to Josh Kimbrell's house, actually. He had a kind of a block
party. You guys were kind of near us, because I think he's actually kind of close to... He's on Lake Bowen, isn't he? Or near there? Rounds in there?
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know where he is, and I was there.
You were there.
I mean, I followed my GPS, and it's like we're going through all these little roads.
You're not looking at it. You're just following the road.
I think I'm in the twilight zone.
If it's not between the two yellow lines, you don't know where.
But it's over there somewhere in Spartanburg, and there is a lake.
I think he's on my side of town.
I don't know. Sure. Yeah, I think he's closer to you now.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing that and being surprised because I was like, that's a haul, because it's a haul for me. So that he comes up here this way.
Yeah, it's H-A-U-L. Okay, I was wondering what haul you were on.
Yeah.
It was in the H-A-L-L.
Yeah, H-A-U-L.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, it was great. We had a lot of great food, hamburgers, hot dogs, typical 4th of July stuff. And then his mother, Cindy, showed up with some kind of nectar from heaven that I'm just telling you, she was like, I don't like this stuff, but everybody wants me to fix it. It's some kind of fruit, pineapple, something cake. And all I can tell you is eating it put me in some type of out-of-body experience. And I just told her, I said, well, anytime you want to make this is to get it out of your house because you don't like it. I'd be glad to just call me. I'll come and pick it up, whatever's necessary. But anyway, it was... it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. Josh bought, Josh and some other people in the neighborhood put their money together, and they put on this fireworks show that was pretty impressive. I lit one and burned three fingers on my left hand. I mean, they didn't have lighters out there, so like an idiot.
Matches?
Yes. I've never done that. I mean, I've always had a lighter, but I really wanted to test this one thing. So I said, well, I can do it. So I struck the match and stick it up. And, of course, the minute the fuse lit, it shot all the fire back on my fingers.
Yeah,
and
you weren't quick enough on the withdrawal.
One, two, three. I mean, my thumb and the next two fingers were black.
Oh.
It was not good. They're doing okay now, but it was just weird. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you. You'd said when we were talking earlier that there was a time when it was just – constant fireworks. You couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, I have never heard more fireworks in my life. And they don't bother me. I mean, I know all my suburban mom friends are like, why are you shooting fireworks off? It scares my dog. It terrifies my children. You know, we have to do that every time there's fireworks.
Well,
I'll tell you what, though. I didn't actually see a single one of those posts this weekend. And I, like I said, I have never heard more fireworks. It doesn't bother anybody in my house. So, you know, I get to enjoy them.
It was just, thankfully it doesn't bother the dogs. We had Josh and Allison's dogs till Sunday, and they, they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
Some dogs do go crazy.
Yeah.
But it was incredible.
It was a constant rumble. For 3 hours, there was not a moment, the briefest moment, where there was not a firework being shot off
I
could hear. And it was, and generally it was 5 or 6 all at the same time. I mean, like I said, it was just constant. I was dumbfounded.
Smoke, I mean, you're going to think I'm crazy, but the smoke was so thick when we were leaving, trying to drive out of Josh's neighborhood, that it was actually, I was afraid I was going to run over somebody that was out in the middle of the road with one of these canisters.
Yeah.
It was crazy, but it was a lot of fun. And and it's not just here. I mean, in California, where you're not supposed to shoot off fireworks, and the mayor was threatening people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a helicopter flew over, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
It looked like South Carolina. And this is L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So
the fire department and the police chief, I mean, everybody's. And, of course, they had said, please don't do this and don't gather. Don't, everybody's still chanting coronavirus stuff. And man, they just were there like, enough is enough. And I guess there was a lot of Americans out there this weekend who, I think there was a myriad of reasons that this happened. One being that there wasn't any one big event that everybody could go to. So a lot of people were like, well, you know what? We're going to do our own thing. So you just had a lot more little things around town. But I think there was a lot of Americans out there too who kind of saw it as a stick it to the man moment.
And well, I kind of hope so. I mean, President Trump gave a speech at Mount Rushmore that was probably the best speech of his presidency. I mean, it was just incredible. And the media lied about it, distorted it, said terrible things. I mean, it is unbelievable where we are. But this is a revolution. We are in the middle. There are people in this country who hate it, and they want to control it. The Democrat Party as a whole has been taken over by progressives. They hate this country, and they want to control it. I mean, that's the scary thing, is that you want to run the thing that you think should be run into the ground. Just listening to the media attack the president over his speech, when his I'm going to read some of it. We're going to get into that. And we're going to talk about it, because it was one of the best speeches of his presidency. And the response to it has been lies, distortions, and just you talk about hatred.
I heard one commentator who say it was really on the level of Mr. Gorbachev's tear down this wall. He said, you know, when you're talking about presidential speeches, he said, and this guy is no fan of Donald Trump necessarily, he's like, but this was on par with that. He said, and he was like, I would have written every single word that he said. He said, and I'm very egotistical. He's like, that's a very high compliment from me.
Well, before we dive into all that, we're going to get back to doing the devotions. I'd kind of gotten away from it last week because we had so much stuff going on, and that's not a good reason, but it's what happened. So we're going to get back to it. We're going to try to take in the first segment every day, just a time to reflect and think about what God's Word has to say. Jim Russell and I write these for Brushy Creek Baptist Church. And we're going to share them. I'm going to share them with you. Today's is called Fleeing from the Presence of God. It's from Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So he went down to Joppa, found a ship which was going to Tarshish, paid the fare, and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. I wonder if you've ever run away from danger. Growing up in a rural area of North Carolina meant being on the alert when you ventured outdoors. I remember running away from snakes, sounds I heard coming from the woods, and the neighbor's dog. He was a mean dog. A little Forrest Gump reference there. Obviously, it makes sense to flee in the face of danger. The Bible commands us to flee sexual immorality, idolatry, youthful lust, and to pursue the righteousness of God. We're also to flee from the wrath of God. God reminds us that when we resist the devil, he will flee from us. So fleeing is something believers should embrace. Followers of Christ stand out from the world by what and who we flee from and what and who we follow after. But we're never called to flee from the presence of God. The Bible tells us there's peace and rest in the presence of God. There's comfort and security. The ultimate destination of all true believers is the presence of God. Paul expressed this in his letter to the Corinthians, saying, we are of good courage, I say, and prefer to be absent from the body and to be present at home with the Lord. So why did Jonah run from God's presence? When we read the entire book of Jonah, we learn that he hated the Ninevites, and he suspected that if he preached that they might repent of their sin. If they repented of their sin, God would forgive them and hold back his hand of judgment from against them. Because of his prejudice and hatred toward the Ninevites, Jonah fled from the presence of God, refusing to obey and choosing an attempt to escape God's call. Fleeing from God always brings disaster for believers. For Jonah, fleeing from God brought God's judgment. Jonah sought to escape God's call by getting on a boat and going the opposite direction from God's call. But God sent a storm to get Jonah's attention and correct his course. Many of the storms that come into our lives are random, but many are caused when we decide to flee from God's word and from his presence. Apathy. Notice Jonah slept while the storm raged. His shipmates were rowing for their lives, knowing they were in a difficult situation. Jonah ignored his circumstances to the point of sleeping through the storm. prayerlessness. Eventually, everyone on the boat was praying except Jonah. His callousness toward God led to prayerlessness. While the pagans on board called out to a God who wasn't there, Jonah refused to call on the one true God who could come to their aid. Despair. Jonah had chosen to go down to Joppa and down into a ship going to Tarshish because he realized the ship was that he was on was going, let me back up, because he realized the ship he was on would sink with him on board. He went down into the water and then down into the belly of a great fish. You see a pattern here? When we decide to flee from the presence of God, until we turn back to Him, the direction of our life will be down. But Jonah came to his senses in the belly of the fish. Chapter 2 tells us he followed the pattern of true repentance. He called and cried out to God for help, verse 2. He turned his gaze back to God, verse 4. He remembered the Lord, verse 7. He sacrificed to the Lord by praising Him out of the depth of his despair, verse 9. And he recommitted himself to the task God called him to fulfill. Sometimes despair and anxiety can cause us to zig when God calls us to zag. But God's purpose for our life is always better than any alternative we would foolishly embrace. Jonah preached, the Ninevites repented from the greatest to the least, and an entire generation was spared the experience of God's judgment. I pray we won't have to experience the depth of God's correction before we remember to cry out to Him for the height of His blessings. If you didn't get to hear the president's speech at Mount Rushmore, you need to go watch it, listen to it, get a copy of the transcript, read it, because the president schooled a lot of these revolutionaries, which is what they are. This is, again, what progressives are trying to do right now is a revolution. And it has more to do with the French Revolution, where eventually they'll turn on themselves, just like in the French Revolution. Because the American Revolution was rooted and grounded in a belief in God and the limited nature of government, and the entire Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, spelled out the limits of government because our founders understood the sinful nature of humans. And the French Revolution was more of this progressive nonsense that we're getting now, where you just go out and destroy everything and turn everything upside down until you get what you want. Then when you get it, you're like a dog who was chasing a car. When you finally catch it, you don't know what to do with it. And then you had the guillotine. I mean, I read an article this weekend about that they've found a site in France where they found a lot of the remains of people who were guillotined in the public square. And that's what, I mean, people are not physically being guillotined yet in the United States, but they are being metaphorically guillotined, losing their jobs, being canceled. They're scared to death to, one, say anything that resembles any criticism of the Black Lives Matter movement, and number two, afraid that if they don't say exactly the right thing, even when they do say something, that they're going to be canceled, that people are going to come after them and try to ruin them, take their livelihood. So President Trump came out Friday night, and I believe it was Friday. I don't think it, or was it Saturday? Whichever day it was over the weekend, and gave an amazing. Yeah, it was Friday night. Gave this amazing speech at Mount Rushmore, where he went through the contributions of the people that are represented there. Teddy Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. He went through the reasons that the greatness of those people. One of the things he said, our founders launched not only a revolution in government, but a revolution in the pursuit of justice, equality, liberty, and prosperity. And insisting that all men are created equal, they enshrined a divine truth that changed the world forever. Indeed, these mortal words set in motion the unstoppable march of freedom. And that's exactly right. That's what I was trying to say here on Friday, is that the idea, and I said this Sunday morning at Brushy Creek, yes, our founding fathers were imperfect men, but the ideas that they put forth that are enshrined in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence spell the death of slavery. It took a while. It's like any new idea. You have to understand that prior to 1776, prior to the American Revolution, people lived and died in a class system of which they had no escape. There was nothing they could do about their circumstances in life. They were born poor, they were going to die poor. If they were born rich, they would probably die rich unless there was some kind of catastrophic event. So you were born, you accepted your circumstances in life. There was the servant class and the ruling class, and that was pretty much it. And along comes the American Revolution and the idea that government is limited and that government is meant to serve the people and that government is supposed to be of, by, and for the people. That was a radical, radical idea in 1776. And it was born, and then when it came to full growth, it eradicated slavery, it raised people out of poverty, it gave them opportunity they'd never had in their life. And this is the greatest country that has ever existed on planet Earth because it was built on one of the best ideas and the truth of who people are created in the image of God. Now, let me give you one other quote here from President Trump. I'm looking for, he was talking about a garden to heroes. I'm probably not going to find the quote that I want this quick, but he talked about equal rights for the born. Yeah, here we go. This was it. He said that Americans believe in equal opportunity, equal justice, equal treatment for citizens of every race, background, religion, and creed. Every child of every color, born and unborn, is made in the holy image of God. I mean, this is incredible stuff. This is truth on steroids being spoken at a time and in a setting. I mean, he's right there at Mount Rushmore where the revolution, the people, the progressives who would tear it down, you know, and the people at the New York Times that think that that Mount Rushmore should come down because it's on land stolen from Native Americans. I wonder if they're going to move their offices out of New York, since the entire island, since the entire peninsula, the entire portion of New York is sitting on land that was taken from Native Americans for some trinkets. I mean, is the New York Times concerned about that? Of course not. Nobody's leaving their penthouse. This is not that kind of it's not a revolution that's based on principle. It's a revolution based on the destruction of the values that have gotten us to this point in U.S. history. And so the media, this is the kind of stuff that they wrote. CNN led a news report with this on this very different 4th of July holiday, when many Americans are wrestling with the racist misdeeds of the country's heroes and confronting an unrelenting pandemic with surging cases. Their commander-in-chief is attempting to drag America backward, stirring fear of cultural change while flouting the most basic scientific evidence about disease transmission. The Washington Post started with President Trump's unyielding push to preserve Confederate symbols. Did you hear anything about a Confederate symbol?
No, he didn't mention any Confederates at all.
I mean, he talked about national monuments and heroes.
He hailed Abraham Lincoln and called the Civil War, quote, the struggle that saved our Union and extinguished the evil of slavery. I mean, these people are insane.
To preserve Confederate symbols and the legacy of white domination, crystallized by his harsh denunciation of the racial justice movement Friday night at Mount Rushmore. You know, has unnerved Republicans who have long enabled him and now fear losing power and forever associating their party with his racial animus. There was nothing racist about his speech. He told the truth about America. He talked about the cancel culture and the fact that they're a bunch of fascists. And that's absolutely true. I mean, people who go after other people because of their opinion and try to destroy them because they don't say the thing that matches up with what they want them to say, I don't know what else to call them. And the Washington Post comes out and takes a speech that's patriotic. That's all it was. I mean, 4 years ago, a speech like this by Barack Obama would have been heralded as one of the great statements of freedom. But no, because it's Donald Trump and the media hate him, they vilify the truth that he spoke.
Well, and it's not just that. They hate the United States, and they have for a long time, but their hatred of Donald Trump, because of his willingness to speak for the things that so many Americans actually believe in and speak about those things, they've been able, their hatred of the United States as a whole has been really exposed in the last 3 to 4 years.
It really is. Folks, we have to stand up and push back against this, or we are going to lose the greatest country that's ever. I mean, we won't lose it to some type of war,
foreign invader.
It's not going to be somebody. No, mm-hmm. we're not going to have the Chinese, you know, Navy going up the Potomac. We're going to have revolutionary people who deny America's true history, overturning one of the greatest concepts of freedom that the world has ever known, and replacing it with this very, very bad totalitarianism, because that's really what it comes down to. You know, they want to go back to what you talk about, the president dragging us back, what the revolutionaries, what those who are these progressives who are tearing down monuments and rioting all over the country and causing violence that we're going to talk about in a minute, because mm-hmm. we vilified the police and beat them into submission in these blue states. Where, and even in some red states, but in blue states in particular, where mayors and governors are hiding under their desk instead of taking the law and order and putting it back where it belongs in the streets, they're using this movement and this moment as a chance to upend anything that has to do with American values. The Washington Post over the weekend published an opinion piece talking about how we've got to stop celebrating the 4th of July. I mean, that we're just going to have to, because of the questionable nature of the founding of our country. And Colin Kaepernick, this is a tweet he put out. Black people have been dehumanized, brutalized, criminalized, and terrorized by America for centuries. Are expected to join your commemoration of independence while you enslaved our ancestors? We reject your celebration of white supremacy and look forward to liberation for all. See, that's mm-hmm. the new mantra, that our founding fathers were white supremacists, even though they brought forth the ideas that eventually caught fire, that was already in the heart of many of the founders, and changed the America and changed the world for the better. That's the truth. That's what happened. And anybody that tells you anything different from that is lying for their own purposes, to revise U.S. history to try to bring down the greatest country that has ever been on the planet. I really believe that the mainstream media, it could be said about many in the mainstream media, at least the ones that are at the White House asking questions at a press conference, really don't care about black lives. To them, I don't understand how you can say that black lives matter, since they asked 12 questions, 12, about the Confederate flag, not one question about the black lives that were taken over the weekend in violent acts of murder and rioting that took place across this country over July the 4th. Not one question. Doesn't matter how many people died in Chicago. Doesn't matter how many people died in New York. Doesn't matter that an 8-year-old girl was shot to death, an 8-year-old African-American girl shot to death at the Wendy's, where they're basically I would bring a lawsuit. If I was that father, I would sue the city of Atlanta so fast that they wouldn't be able to turn around before they got the lawsuit against them, because they've allowed this thing to go on and on without going in and cleaning it out, just like they did in Seattle. And now, all of a sudden, there's panic. The mayor is begging people to stop shooting each other in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to be the result?
They've had over 75 shootings in Atlanta in the last couple of weeks. I mean, 75 shootings. She came out, the mayor came out and said, you know, we're doing this. We're the ones. The enemy's within. And we're the ones. She said the APD, the Atlanta Police Department, they didn't do this. we did this.
Yeah, finally.
An 8-year-old, she finally comes out and says what we're all sitting here thinking. Well, it's not the Atlanta Police Department that's out there shooting people in the streets. And she says it. She's like, it's not the police officers that are shooting people in the streets.
You don't want the police? Fine. Just pull them all. We'll pull them all back and we'll give you CHOP. We'll just pull them all back and we'll give you a demilitarized zone, around Wendy's, and we'll see how that works. And how it works is that black lives die. Black lives are taken, and they were taken all over the country.
Did you hear she was doing a, they were doing a U-turn. They came up against the, the blockade in the road, and her mom said, oh, we can't go here, and they start doing a U-turn, and they just open fire. I mean, there's absolutely nothing that they were doing. Just literally trying to do a U-turn to get turn the other way because they couldn't get by on the road because the these protesters were putting up a roadblock.
Three people were killed, 20 injured in shooting stemming from the unrest in the area so far, according to Atlanta police. In Atlanta right now, murders are up 86% over 28 days compared to the last time. This time last year, aggravated assaults increased by 22% and burglaries are up by 14%. And I could go, look, I've got a list here in front of me, but just suffice it to say this, in New York and Chicago and in Atlanta and in Philadelphia and other big cities across the country, this is out of control, and authorities that are elected by the people of these cities in order to keep order and to provide for the common welfare have been derelict in their duties, and they've allowed these situations to exist because they're afraid to send the police in there to do their jobs. And they've got the police so browbeaten. I mean, in New York, where crime is getting out of control. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. In New York City, it is out of control. And what are they doing? We're going to take $1 billion away from the police departments. This is what you get. This is what progressive governance looks like. This is what left-wing progressive tyranny looks like. And I'm telling you, if we embrace it, we're going to see this everywhere. You'll see it. You'll see it in every state, every place. If this is the kind of ideology that we embrace, and please do not make a mistake here. I don't care what Joe Biden says. He tries to peddle, soft pedal. He comes out and he talks about, well, we need to take down the Confederate monuments, but we've got to protect Washington and Jefferson. Baloney. Do you think he would stand up for 5 seconds against the cancel culture of his own party? Do you think if the progressives are going to back down because Joe Biden, who is trying to get elected president, he understands that most Americans are not going to support taking down the Washington Monument. So he's trying to walk this middle road, this middle line. But you put these people in power, you give them any real power, and this is what you're going to get. We're seeing this, it's being telegraphed right now where progressives and radicals want to take this country.
Well, you just have to look at the mayors who are in charge of the Rochester is a black African-American woman. Atlanta, the mayor is a black African-American woman. Minneapolis is a black African-American woman. Now, Seattle, I think, is a white, but she's a white Democrat woman. Again, over and over and over again, the cities that you're seeing the worst of these situations. And if that doesn't wake up the left and the African-Americans to see who's really actually protecting our lives, Minneapolis, a police department that legitimately had some issues, and that police officer should not have been on the force for as long as he was. Why was there not a single Democrat in that city who has been decrying all of this police brutality? Why wasn't there a single one of them that said before this, wait a minute, we need to reform our police department instead of covering up for these guys,
letting things
go, looking the other direction.
Exactly.
It's been Democrats every time. And I've been really hesitant to get on this. Oh, look, the coronavirus is worse in cities where there's Democrats. The violence is worse where there's cities where it's, but you know what? You just have to look around and you start seeing the numbers stacking up. And if that doesn't wake you up that these people do not care about black lives because they've been letting them get killed in their streets for years and years.
Chicago's been run by liberals for as long as anybody can remember.
When are we finally going to say, wait a minute, maybe we should at least try something different?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and not try. Here's what something different doesn't look like. It doesn't look like destroying the very ideas and writing editorials about the ideas that actually set people free if we would simply embrace them. I mean, it's an incredible thing. By the way, we talked about the murder rate in Atlanta being up 86% over the 27 days compared to last year. How about New York? New York, if you want to be safe, you think, well, I'll move out of Atlanta. Make sure you don't go to New York City, because in New York City, shootings have risen 205% in June, making it the bloodiest month since 1996, and that's before the great New York crime miracle. Milwaukee has experienced 132% increase in homicides, with 86 this year compared to 37 at the same time last year. It would take the rest of the program to go through this list of innocent people who are dying at the hands of people who are out rioting and taking advantage of the upheaval that's been going on in the country. And it is a terrible thing. Steven's on the phone. Steven, go ahead.
Hey, y'all. I'm trying to understand sanctuary cities, right? I'm from Boston, as you know. Not really the inner part of the city, but a place called the South Shore, which is south of Boston, where Pilgrims landed and all that stuff. A little town called Marshfield. And we are loaded, like, with the residential construction, we are loaded with a lot of Brazilian Portuguese. Just as in Berea, there's just a lot of Latinos that have taken over the residential construction, because general contractors typically don't want to put people on the books, because that means they're going to have to lose money themselves, because they don't have to pay the taxes the insurance.
What is your question?
But what I'm trying to say is, my question is, are all these crimes taking place in sanctuary cities, and is this an opportunity? Me as a guy, I want to fix it. Is this an opportunity for the president to make sanctuary cities illegal?
Well, he's tried to do that, Stephen. The courts are not on the president's side in this. In terms of cutting off money, I mean, they've tried by saying, we're going to withhold federal dollars if you flout federal law, when it comes to cooperating with ICE agents. And I mean, you know, that's why there's not a whole lot when you're talking about state by state, city by city. I mean, we're still a federalist country where states and municipalities have the right, in many cases, to set their own policies. And it's up to the people that live in those cities to say, this is ridiculous, and to get rid of these people in government who are allowing these things to happen, that are letting the cities get out of control, and to put people in who will be responsible, clean up the cities, enforce the law, support the police, and to do the kind of things that are just common sense things that for some reason have fallen out of practice in the last 2 months. By the way, we can rest easy. All of our problems are soon going to be solved politically and otherwise. Kanye West is running for president. He announced his campaign, and he's already been chastised because he might take black votes away from Biden. That's been pretty much the sole analysis of his campaign. Kanye West is not going to be president of the United States. He's not going to. That's not going to happen. But his candidacy will be colorful, probably. It will certainly be interesting to watch. And amid the Biden and Trump battle that's going on and is intensifying as you get closer to Election Day. But anyway, I just want to throw that out, that Kanye West is running. I haven't even looked at his platform. I just got a notification on my phone that he was running. So I have no idea what he said.
I'm trying to find what his tweet was, because, this is it. We must now realize the promise of America by trusting God, unifying our vision, and building our future. I'm running for president of the United States. Hashtag 2020 vision.
Yeah.
So if you'd have told me, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago that Kanye West is going to run for president on the platform of God and country and unification.
Yeah.
I probably would have told you to go to the funny house.
Well, that's a pretty good platform. But I mean, really? It just fascinates me. I mean, here we are in July, and he decides he's going to run. I mean, it's publicity. That's what it'll be. Now, yep. Don't get me wrong. I'm not questioning or doubting what he really thinks he can achieve here. Mm-hmm. But in reality, what he's going to achieve is draw a lot of attention to himself. And he could, I mean, he'll get some votes. I don't know how many. I imagine he'll get fewer votes than he sells records or, what do you call them now? Projects, not CDs anymore.
Albums. I mean, they still call them albums.
Do they call them albums?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine that'll happen. But
we don't know why they call them albums, but they still do.
I guess we just haven't come up with another word for something that's digital, essentially. Yeah. I wanted to, as we head up to the top of the hour here, there's a great piece at National Review today, Catherine Jean Lopez. The title is "The Audacity of a New Kind of Hope," and it says the subtitle: "Its basis is faith and reason, Christianity and the American founding, and virtue, and it can come alive again." In other words, so the basis of American thinking and the founders was faith and reason, and there's some great quotes here from William F. Buckley. Because actually the writer goes back and says, you know, when I'm in doubt or I begin to question what is going to happen with America going forward, I go back and remind myself of a speech from 1979 that William F. Buckley made. You know, he died in 2008. He was a world-class conservative thinker, an amazing writer and speaker for that matter. But here's what Buckley said in this speech. In the United States, we have a Constitution, and in particular, the Bill of Rights. These are essentially a list of prohibitions. It is a list of things that the government cannot do to the people. What a huge distinction, a majestic distinction. It grew out of a long empirical journey, the eternal spark of which, of course, traces to Bethlehem, to that star that magnified man beyond any power of the emperors and gold seekers and legions of soldiers and slaves, a star that implanted in each one of us that essence that separates us from the beast and tells us that we are made in the image of God and we were meant to be free. He went on, he said, America cannot presume to offer itself up in a frenzy of moral vanity as the secular reflection of the incarnation. But Americans can say, as Lincoln did, that our country was founded on a proposition that government of the people, by the people, and for the people is of the nature of Americanism, that our ideals are proudly ours. And it is a good thing every now and then to go back to some of our best thinkers to try to put into perspective what's really mm-hmm. important. And that's why I talked a little bit earlier about the fact that one of the great things about our Constitution is that it is a limiting document. The reason that it is a document about freedom is it limits the ability of government to curtail that freedom. Just look at what's happening in Hong Kong right now. I mean, these are people. You are witnessing what happens when people who have lived in freedom come under the thumb of tyranny. Because China's security rules, I mean, they're getting rid of the freedom of the press in China. Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these social media platforms are going to have to decide if they're going to be able to operate and continue to operate in Hong Kong, are they going to give in to the limitations that the Chinese government is going to put on them to operate in Hong Kong? And Hannah's...
Yep, I'm nodding my head emphatically. Yeah, they most definitely will. I mean, Google's already agreed to buckle under China and say, right. Hey, we'll do whatever you want as long as we can make a buck over there. We don't care if we have to censor stuff and
freedom,
take things away.
Don't give me freedom from people or talk about it from people who run companies that are more interested in knuckling under to Chinese tyranny than they are defending the principles of freedom and free speech. They don't give a rip about that. Or the fact that people in Hong Kong are now, I mean, they've lost their rights. Hong Kong valiantly push back against Chinese oppression, and then the coronavirus hit, and while the coronavirus was crippling everybody, China moved in, got rid of all the the protesters are locked up. Mm-hmm. The people who were pushing back against Chinese control, you don't hear about them anymore. They're gone. They're either dead or in a gulag somewhere. And this is the way communism works. This is what the nation of China is. And all you have to do is look at Hong Kong. There's an article today about hoping that people in Hong Kong can somehow make it to the United States, because if they can't get out, if they're trapped there, they're going to live under Chinese communist rule, and their freedoms have been eviscerated already. And this is the Chinese lied. I mean, is anybody shocked by that? That a bunch of Marxists would lie in order to get control? That's exactly what's happening with the progressives in this country.
The problem is that we have an entire generation of young people who they don't think that it's wrong for China to have done that, because what they're told is people deserve that if they say certain things. And Right. They're being told that those people who are being thrown into prison, who are being ripped from their homes, that they've said certain things that are quote unquote wrong or racist or just not right or whatever it is over there that they can tout. Over here, it would be that they're anti-homosexual. Homosexual, or that they're anti-black or Asian or just whatever, racist, that homophobic. Those would be the tags you'd be slapped with here in order to justify, well, they deserve being thrown in jail or ripped from their homes and having their jobs stripped. And they're being told the exact same thing over in Hong Kong. And that should be incredibly concerning for those of us who believe in liberty and who are Americans, who say, you know what, you have the freedom to say whatever you want, whether right or wrong.
Yeah. Well, not in Hong Kong anymore.
Nope.
And we should have seen this coming. We should have known that as soon as the Chinese had the opportunity, that they would move in and make Hong Kong just a puppet of the Chinese government, and that they would not put up with freedom. They're not going to allow it on mainland China, not going to allow it in Hong Kong. And what was an absolute gem in Southeast Asia is now going to become just another example of Chinese oppression. And I'm with Hannah. I'm very concerned that that's going to happen here, that unless we wake up and get out from under this stupor of thinking that this is just another election, this is just another, that there are two parties that just have a different view of life. No, that's not where we are anymore. There's one party that wants to tear everything down and remake it in a different image.